Okay, we're doing Rav Chalap on Parashat Devarim. Hageula al yedei tikkun hadibur. Redemption comes through fixing our speech. The foundation of redemption is about speech. Our speech is at the root of our exile. We go down to Mitzrayim. Yosef spoke badly about his brothers, right? We go down to Mitzrayim, our exiles begin with inappropriate speech, Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, right? So the host speaks inappropriately, Bar Kamtza speaks inappropriately, Rabbi Zchariah ben Avkulas is silent inappropriately. It's about speech. And Rav Chalap says, had we spent 400 years in Egypt the way it was initially decreed, so then we would have redeemed our speech completely. We didn't spend the 400 years there, or we couldn't spend the 400 years there, so we didn't fill out our duties in exile or fix what had to be fixed for complete redemption. The root of the people of Israel is to be, as the Navi says, Atem Eidai. You are my witnesses, Hashem says in Yeshaya. What does that mean? That means we're supposed to give testimony. And this is a great rule when we speak about what we're supposed to do. We say, there's what's hidden, what's inside of you, your potential, your thoughts. And then there's what's revealed. And that's what we express, what we speak, what we say. It says, Hashem gives wisdom, mipiv, from Hashem's mouth comes understanding and knowledge. So long as our speech is constricted, that a person doesn't feel free to say, God is great, look at what wonderful things Hashem did, well, a person is still in exile. Redemption is the freedom of speech, the ability to sing praise, the ability to say how wonderful Hashem is in a person's life or in a person's redemption. The Navi Yeshayahu says, Amzu yatzarti li, I have formed this nation, my nation, tehilati yisaperu, and they will recount my praise. Am Yisrael's duty to recount Hashem's praise. But we stutter. When we come to praise Hashem, we hesitate. We have inner inhibitions. We're not prepared to say things are great. Yes, it makes sense. It's right. It's correct. We're not completely redeemed. And that means that our vessels, our self, our capacity still is short. Our capacity is still not fulfilled. And we say it's true, but we're not completely there. Our declaration is not completely there. I would add, our Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, is not completely there. Redemption is the ability to say it completely. And that's why people have hesitations and doubts, where those hesitations and doubts bring people to stumble spiritually, and that's what brings a person to being materialistic and hedonistic, because it starts with, can I praise Hashem? Can I really see the redemption? Can I really say, it's good, Ribon Shalom, thank you? If I'm prepared to be open to it, the more open I am to it, the less hesitation. The less hesitation, the more I can connect to spirituality. The hesitation is what limits us. Well, that's the exile that's still here. But again, the root of what Rav Chalap is saying is that exile and redemption revolve around speech. Our ability to say something, not just to verbalize it, but to mean it. And speech is an expression of thought. Our inhibitions in thought are what limit our speech. Yes?
Is he basing his point on the fact that redemption is a subjective thing?
I don't know if you have to say that.
Is he saying that when a person realizes subjectively, if a person looked on this, you know, it is what it is. It's no difference how it feels, right? So the fact that he is He's saying that a person, when a person is able to do this, it sounds like it's a subjective thing. Like he's able to realize, he's able to.
His ability is subjective. I'm not sure the redemption is subjective.
Well,
yes.
No, at that point we're redeemed all the time. We're always redeemed every second of the day.
On some level, okay.
Is that why Moshe couldn't come to Israel?
Why?
Well, he said, you rebellious ones. And then you, I guess, didn't be redeemed and come to Israel.
Maybe. I don't know. It says that with the redemption, as yimalei schok pinu ulshonenu rina, then our mouths will be filled with song and laughter and praise. Then we will be able to fulfill our duty to be the witnesses, the Navi Yeshaya said. And when we can do our job of saying our praise of Hashem, that's what leads to what the Navi describes as umal'a ha'aretz de'a or dat et Hashem. Just as the waters cover the floor of the sea, so too knowledge will spread throughout the land. If we lament the fact that there isn't knowledge throughout the land, says Rav Chalap, well, then we have to realize it begins with us. Is there knowledge within us? Are we capable of singing Hashem's praise completely? Or are we hesitant? If we sing it completely, if we give our testimony completely, then from that the world will also recognize Hashem. We wait for a time that the whole world will see Hashem. Wait, have I seen Hashem? Am I willing to openly say it? Am I willing to say it without my inhibitions? I'm not, says Rav Chalap. That's why the world doesn't see it yet either. Because we're not there yet.
But then that begs the question that if we are to see it, then how does that eventually translate into the world seeing it? Meaning it, on a certain level, we do see it. Meaning there's like if we're asking the question, how does the world not see it? That implies that in a way, maybe not completely, which is what I believe Rav Klapp is coming to explain to us, but to the level that we do see it, would that not be reflective then that the world sees it on the same level? If we saw it completely, then it would then translate, according to what I'm understanding that I'm saying, if the world sees it as well? Is the world vision of truth reflective of our vision of truth? Or are they two, or does one need, do they even, does one rely on the other? Are they two totally separate? I'm failing to understand the connection between our vision and the world's vision. I understand that there is some sort of connection, because that's what the Rav is saying.
That's the first line. The world is waiting for us. But you ask me a great question. You're supposed to. You answer it, but you know, if you waited until you had that kind of clarity to praise Hashem, maybe I'd never praise Hashem.
I don't think it's all or nothing.
Right.
I think it's
right.
We say Shmona Esrei three times a day. We praise Hashem many times a day.
To really be there and I mean it fully. That's the goal.
But he's saying
yourself. You say, if you don't see the knowledge out there, you need to get it in here first, and then maybe it'll be contagious, and that's the work. How do you do it? Go ahead.
He drew an order, right? He said that because we don't connect to the concept, so we don't sing the praise. We don't sing it as forcefully as we would if we did. If we don't sing the praise as forcefully as if we did, that's why we suddenly find ourselves doubting. We find ourselves doubting, then we find ourselves stumbling spiritually, which ultimately leads a person to being materialistic. So let's take it backwards now. If there is a complete praise, if a person can connect completely to it, so then a person will not find himself doubting. And if a person isn't doubting, so then he is not stumbling spiritually, he continues growing spiritually, and then a person is less and less materialistic. Let's take an example, okay? There was a king called Ahaziah. Ahaziah was walking in his attic, and in order to have air flow in the attic, this is First Temple period, they used to have part of the attic that was made of a netting of wood, so that the air could flow in. So he walks on this netting of wood, and the wood cracks under him, and he falls to the lower floor, and he gets very wounded. So he's lying there sick in bed, and he's not sure if he's going to live or not. So he sends messengers to the Philistine pagan house of worship, where they had this huge figure of a bug called Baal Zvuv, and the people of Ekron, they worship that figure of a bug. And Ahaziah, the Jewish king, sends messenger to the priests of Baal Zvuv, and he asks them, am I going to live? So Elio shows up, and he meets the messengers en route. God sent him. And Elio tells the messengers, go back to the king and tell him, is there no God among the Jewish people? You have to go to the Philistines. Tell him he's not getting up from bed. He's going to die. What was the problem? Well, until that point, from the time of Judges, from the time of Samson, till that point in Jewish history, everyone knew that the Jews looked down at the Philistine paganism. And so even the Philistines didn't dare fight us because they had seen how they lost at the hands of Samson, at the hands of little David versus Goliath. So we had a period of centuries where the Philistines didn't dare raise their head. And when Ahaziah was sending word to the Philistine church and asking them, am I going to live? Tell me, what do you priests say? What he was saying is, there's validity in your paganism. And by saying that, he was actually empowering the Philistines to fight us again. So when Eliyahu shows up and says, you're looking to their God, what are you doing? You're going to empower them, and then they're going to fight us. You're not going to live. I'll tell you the answer. We see the evolvement of the weakness and faith in Ahaziah, which will lead to the empowerment of the Philistines, which will lead to the attack on the Jewish people. So our behavior, as we discussed last night, is not in a vacuum. In a very micro form, our behavior only impacts the tens of thousands of offspring we're going to have. Okay, it's just a question of your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, etc. But in a macro form, on a larger level, our behavior affects everyone. Now, let's take another example. Elio's disciple, Elisha, he lives a life of piety. So when Naaman, the general who had killed the Judean king Ahav, when Naaman comes to visit Elisha and asks him, how can I be cured of my leprosy? And Elisha doesn't even walk out of his house. Elisha's sitting at home learning Torah. And Naaman shows up with all his army, and he's standing there in his great glory, and he's waiting for Elisha to come out. And Elisha sends a kid. He says, go tell him to dip in the Jordan 7 times. And what does Naaman say? Amarti, I thought he would come out here with his wand, wave it, say fancy incantations, do something impressive and cure me. What's he telling me? Go to the Jordan? Amana and Parpar, the beautiful rivers of Damascus, are so much better than the Jordan. Why would I go to the Jordan? And then a servant says, you know what? But he has a reputation. He's a man of God. Why don't you go listen to him? You lose nothing. So they go to the Jordan and he dunks 7 times and his skin comes out clean as a baby. Now he comes back to Elisha. And instead of standing out there with all his army, he gets off his horse. And he goes to Elisha. Until now he was waiting outside. Let Elisha come to me, right? I'm the great warrior. He'll give me a service. I'll pay him. No, Naaman gets off his horse. He runs to Elisha's house. He says, now I know there's a God in Israel. Well, how can I pay you? Elisha says, I don't want anything. He says, no, I'll give you gold. I'll give you silver. I'll give you honor. I don't want anything. And this goes on again and again, and Elisha says, I don't want anything. So Naaman went from being this general who thinks that everything's about the show to seeing Elisha, who says, I don't want anything. I don't want anything from you. Naaman is impacted. What a Kiddush Hashem. He's going to go back and ultimately he's going to be the king of Aram. And he's going to be the nemesis of the Jewish people. And Elisha says, you know, I fear the day, the cruelty that you will afflict upon the Jewish people. And Naaman has to be impressed. He says, I'm not going to go worship any pagan gods anymore. So Naaman is impressed. Why is he impressed? Because Elisha can verbalize his praise of Hashem. Because Elisha connects to the praise of Hashem. Because Elisha is not interested in the physical world. Because Elisha's not there. But Elisha's servant is there. Gehazi sees the money. Gehazi sees the external. And so even though Elisha's not interested and you have the greatest Kiddush Hashem and Naaman walks away a different person, well, a few minutes later, Gehazi goes running after Naaman and he says, you know, Elisha just sent me to tell you that some lads just showed up and we'd like to give him some food, we'd like to give him some money, maybe you want to give us, and everything Naaman offers, he says, yeah, I'll take that too. And you want some land? Yeah, I'll take that too. And Gehazi's doing the exact opposite. He's undoing everything Elisha did. Why? Why did Gehazi just do that? Because Gehazi wasn't where Elisha was. So we see the story in macro when we see Elisha. Elisha is dealing with the general of Aram, who will ultimately be the king, who will lead the legions, who will attack Israel and inflict tremendous carnage in the land of Israel. But it's not only that. Chazal say every one of us can be Elisha in that sense. We can affect the world. How do I behave when I'm standing in line? How important is it to me? Yes, to cut the line, not to cut the line. To be honest with the guy next to me. Well, it goes back to the question, where's my focus? How do I view the world? Where's my focus and how I view the world is a reflection of how I verbalize. Do I sing the praise of Hashem? If I sing the praise of Hashem, connect to the praise of Hashem, well then my life is about the praise of Hashem, so then I view other things in a different light. Rav Chalap says redemption begins with speech, because when we can say the praise of Hashem comfortably, so then we connect to the truth of Hashem, so then our doubts melt away and our spiritual strength grows and our attraction to the materialistic world retracts. I would add one more example. People are often frustrated that here in Israel there are so many people who don't keep Shabbat. There are so many people who are not observant. And I always thought that it's unfortunate, but the reality we see is damning of us. And I think I always said this when I was in yeshiva, I've been saying it for 20 years now, that if a person who is observant of Torah behaves differently online in the makolet, drives differently when he's riding his bike or driving his car, if every person knew that my observant neighbor is different than everyone else here, so then they'd want to be that like that. So when we look at them and say, why don't they change? Why don't they do it? I say, well, why haven't we convinced them? Aren't we, if what we're doing is the way it should be, then it should be so attractive that they would say, I want to do that. So obviously I'm oversimplifying it, but I still think there's a huge element of truth in that. And Rav Chalap says, our song of praise. That's what's going to teach the world. Yes.
So just real quick, summarize, would it be accurate to say that our speech is a reflection of where we're holding, essentially?
Yeah. But he's saying it's not only a reflection. He's saying there's the whatever isn't verbalized is concealed. It's not only a reflection, it's also taking it from the concealed potential to a realized reality. there's also that element. And again, if we'll take an example that's not directly this, let's say a person said Lashon Hara. They regret they spoke badly. They regret they said Lashon Hara. Let's say a person wasted time on the internet and they regret it. So you have a scenario where a person just says, shucks, I shouldn't have done that. And then you have a person that in their Shemona Esrei, when they say Slach Lanu, they pause and they say, Rabon Shel Olam, I know I shouldn't have done that, and I regret doing what I did, A and B and C. The person who said it is in a totally different place than the person who just thought it. And try it once, you'll see. Rav Chalap says, speech takes something from being a potential, a theoretical, an internal concept, a hidden concept, to a recognized reality. Yes?
So I just want to take a step further into the summary and kind of propose this as a possible answer to the original question. Thank you for the example to help illustrate that in addition to, as you said very nicely, our speech being a reflection of where we're holding or what our perception is, when we also verbalize that, that is one of the practical stimulants as to what makes our internal reality a chitzoni reality. And it seems to happen in a very practical way. We praise Hashem, we do it honestly. People who are affected by that praise, either by hearing it or if you write it an article and they read it, whatever it might be, that therefore has an influence on them, and then as the idea spreads, the perception of reality on a wider level thus changes. And if your internal reality, meaning your thought, what you are verbalizing through your speech, is reflective of good, it's your perception of truth, then the truth is going to spread on a wider scale by virtue of the practical steps you do in order to take it out from your internal thoughts, verbalize it through speech, is thus received by others in whatever capacity, and then is spread further onward by their verbalization.
I don't think that he means that it's the speech that will spread. I think what he's saying is the speech causes us to grow, and when we grow, so then we become spiritual and less materialistic. That whole process affects what's around us. I'll give you an example. There's a family I know of where the father is very, 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 very non-materialistic. I mean, he never wants anything for himself, and all his kids have turned out that way. It's amazing to see how his kids. And he doesn't have one kid, he has 9 kids. And all his kids, money is just doesn't interest them. So now is it what he said? I don't think so. I think it's the type of person he is that's affected people around him. And whoever knows him, you come in contact with him, you walk away affected. You see what it means to be a person who's not interested in materialistic things. So I don't know that Rav Chalap meant that our speech is what's going to affect the world. Rav Chalap was saying our speech brings us to a different place. Our speech brings us to a connection to that reality. That connection to reality makes it that we have less doubt. If we have less doubt, then we're less materialistic. And then our lives that reflect that reality. That's why I said the way we ride a bike, the way we drive a car, the way we behave in the makolet, it's not just what we're saying. It's not the person who we're inviting to our house. It's the person who's watching us when we don't even know they're watching us. You know, I got off the bus yesterday, and I fold up my bike under the bus, and then I unfold it, and I put the bags on it, and I set it all up, and the whole spiel takes me about 4 minutes as I'm getting ready to ride the next step of the journey. So I'm in the middle of setting up my bike, and my phone rings. So a friend of mine's on the phone. Okay, I'm juggling the bike and the phone and the bag, and I say, hi, how are you? He says, fine. And he says, how are you? And I say, I'm okay. And he says, well, look to your left. So I look to my left, and there he is. There was a busy street, like a highway in between us, and he's there. And I'm thinking, okay, he's been watching me the last 3 minutes. What did I do? Right? I'm thinking back for the last 3 minutes. Now I know I've been observed. And it struck me. And if he hadn't called, I wasn't observed the last 3 minutes. I was. We don't pay attention that there are people around us who are observing us. I think that's how we affect people, even if we didn't think, we didn't notice it. You know, we have many Arab bus drivers in Kochav Yaakov. I try to be respectful of every bus driver. One night, like 11:30 at night, I'm coming back from the Machon, and I was reading something, so when my stop came, I wasn't ready. So I didn't ring the bell. I figured I'll get off the next stop. I'll come back home. It's one stop. It's not a big deal. As I'm putting my stuff together, the driver stops the bus. Okay, figured someone else is getting off, and I'm rushing to get my stuff together. I didn't think I'd make it at my stop anyways. And no one's getting off the bus. After about 3-4 seconds, the driver says, "Aren't you getting off?" I'm looking around, and suddenly I realize he's talking to me. I said, "You're talking to me?" He said, "Yeah, don't you live here?" I said, "Yeah." I scrambled to get off the bus. I didn't want to keep everyone waiting, but it struck me. How did he know where I live? I never thought he knew who I was. I tell him hello, I tell him good night, I tell him thank you. I tried to be nice to him, but I never thought he knows who I am. Right? Suddenly he stops the bus and he's waiting for me. "Aren't you getting off?" Right? Did we notice that guy's looking at me? I think when Rav Chalap says you affect the world, he's not only talking about what we say. We don't realize how much people are watching us and are affected by who we are. Yes.
Well, when Aaron, Aaron Cohen, a lot of the time it points out that he was silent. Now, was that that he? How does that play in there?
So the Medrash says, Eov got hit,
right,
and he cried. He yelled. He spoke. Aaron got hit and he was silent. David got hit and he gave praise. From that Medrash we learn that on different levels, people have different responses. Eov is a giant, and on his level, his response was right.
That wasn't the best response.
But it wasn't the best, right.
That's what I was asking.
That's what it seems like from that Medrash, yeah. Okay, Rav Chalap continues, and he says, when we express our praise, so then our mouths become a stream of honey. Then our speech fills with Hashem's praise. Then we are fulfilling our duty as being witness, where we are giving the testimony the Navi Yeshaya says to Hashem's existence. That's when the world starts filling with the knowledge of Hashem, the recognition of Hashem. Moshe did not desire to have things that were uniquely Moshe. Moshe was not interested in his self-fulfillment. Moshe was interested in Israel's growth. Moshe's desire for closeness to Hashem was a part of his duty. I want to be the messenger I'm supposed to be. I want to be the king I'm supposed to be. Moshe recognized that his existence was intimately connected to the existence of Israel. Without Israel, there's nothing. Hashem tells him, "I'll wipe them out and I'll make you into a great people." And he says, "No." That's the greatest example of Moshe saying, I'm nothing without them. I don't have an existence without their existence. And that's why when Am Yisrael is in exile, Moshe didn't transgress. Moshe didn't do the sin of the golden calf. Moshe didn't do the sin of the spies. Why doesn't Moshe attain the highest level of prophecy? Chazal say, so long as Israel had the 40 years in the desert that they were in exile, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have the revelations he had before the sin of the spies. He doesn't have that unique time with the Ribon Shel Olam. Moshe reverted to being crippled in his speech. If Moshe began his life crippled in his speech, so then after the transgression of the spies, Moshe was, so to speak, on a self-inflicted cripple.
But he wasn't crippled the whole time?
Wasn't he even
that tough? No, Chazal say he was cured at Sinai.
Really?
Chazal say all people were cured at Sinai. When Moshe is sent to Paro, Moshe says, "Vani aral sfatayim, my lips are covered over. I don't have the ability to talk the way I should." Moshe is saying, "How could I talk when all my brothers are in servitude? I'm coming in. God is great. God sent me. I'm here to tell you, let my people go." Moshe says, "I'm supposed to represent you, Hashem. Well, when my people are in this state, I'm limited in my ability to speak."
Didn't you talk about at some point that Moshe, on purpose, had a flawed speech?
The Ran. Yes,
right.
He's dealing on a different level. You're dealing in Pshat. He's dealing on a spiritual level. So he's saying the idea of Moshe's speech being redeemed when the Torah was given was this idea that Moshe says, so long as they're in exile, I can't be free. I can't have the freedom of speech when my people are in such suffering. So initially when he's sent to Pharaoh, he says to their Ribono Shel Olam, I can't express your greatness now. I'm supposed to be a representative of the Ribono Shel Olam. I'm supposed to say, God runs the world and he told you, Pharaoh, let my people go, right? Well, how could I say that so freely when that's not what the world sees? That's not what my people see. That's not where Am Yisrael is holding. Am Yisrael says, what'd you come for, Moshe? Things only got worse since you came, right? God's going to punish you, Moshe, for what you did. That's what they tell him after he leaves Paro. So Moshe says, I'm supposed to speak in your name freely, Ribono Shel Olam. My lips are limited. Says Rav Chalap, his lips became limited after the spies. When was Moshe free? When the Torah was given. When all of Am Yisrael became free. Our freedom really came when we were given a new value system, when Am Yisrael connected to the prophecy at Sinai. But it's only when Am Yisrael is ready to fulfill their reality, to enter the land of Israel, it's only when they've started the process of realizing their mission in the world, living in Israel and fulfilling the Torah, it's only then that Moshe is again redeemed from his speech. And that's why this book begins with Eile HaDevarim. These are the words that Moshe was able to express after he finished the first battle. And we've already entered and conquered the eastern side of the Jordan. And we're already at the threshold of entering Israel. So the Jewish people are free from their sins of the spies. They've started advancing into Israel. Now Moshe can start speaking freely. And that's why in the final 36 days of his life, he gives us a whole book of Torah, Eile HaDevarim, the book of Devarim, the words that Moshe could express freely again, because the Jewish people were again free. As Chazal say, on the 15th of Av, they all went to bed, they all went into their caves, and they got, right, on the 9th of Av every year, they'd go in, and only some would come out. They'd dig graves, everyone would go lie down, and only some would come out. Well, that final year, the 40th year, suddenly they realized everyone's getting out of their grave. They said, maybe we made a mistake in the calendar. Day after day, until the 15th, they look up and they see a full moon. They said, we didn't make any mistake. And they realized the decree was over. Now the Jewish people are free. Now Moshe Rabbeinu can speak freely. So in summation, he says, redemption and exile revolve around speech. The root of exile was speech, be it the exile of Egypt, be it the exile of the destruction of the Second Temple. Our speech is what brings it about. Well, our speech is reflective of our connection to Ribono Shel Olam. Our speech is taking the thought, the hidden connection, and brings it out to the open. When we speak, then we can speak without stuttering. The problem is we do stutter. The problem is we are hesitant. The problem is we're not openly saying we are witness to the acts of Hashem and Hashem runs the world. Even when we say it, our speech is limited. And that's why our thoughts are limited. And that's why we hesitate. And that's why we find ourselves being more materialistic. Moshe Rabbeinu in his humility says, it's not about me. I'm a part of the people, and my whole existence is a part of the people. And so if the people are not in redemption mode, if the people are in exile, as was the case in Mitzrayim, as was the case after the decree of the 40 years in the desert, Moshe says, my speech is limited. That's when Moshe is limited in how he can talk to Paro, and he's limited in what he could tell the Jewish people. The book of Devarim could only be written after Moshe was freed, because the Jewish people were freed, because now they've, in Matan Torah, they were freed the first time. That was the first stage of redemption. They received the Torah. Moshe can learn and teach and speak freely and accept Torah from Hashem. then the Jewish people fall with the sin of the spies. So Moshe Rabbeinu does not have that level of connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Moshe and Am Yisrael worked the 40 years deciphering the Torah they've received thus far. Now at the end of the 40 years, they're free from the decree. They're on the threshold of entering Israel. Once they're free, Moshe is again free. He has the prophecy that he had initially, and we have the whole book of Devarim, which can only come achrei akoto, after he has conquered Sihon and Og, and we've taken the steps to entering the land of Israel to free Am Yisrael. They're free, and they're free in their speech, so he could be free.